Hello. Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, August 7th, 1999. In the Koinonia fireside this morning are Mary Carlson with Dan Spencer. Today's session number is 99-10. Its title is Bioethics and Faith, Human Cloning as Reproduction. Let's listen in.
This is the last in our series this week on bioethics and faith. I'm Mary Carlson. I teach social work at St. Olaf College in Northfield.
I'm Dan Spencer. I teach religion and ethics at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa.
As many of you who have been with us through the week, you know our plan and hope this week, which I believe has come mostly to fruition, is that people who notably are lay people, but also professionals of various types who maybe aren't familiar with bioethics language, become familiar with that language and be able to engage critically and carefully with some of the issues that are facing society and facing individuals in this era, because we are getting pushed all the time in these bioethics issues. Let me ask today how many of you haven't been to any of our sessions?
Quite a few.
That's great. And thank you for coming on Saturday morning. We're prepared for 2 or 20, but Saturday is a less popular time to teach, shall we say. So we're happy that you're all here. Anybody here a twin? Anybody here have twins in the family? My sister's having twins in the next 2 weeks in Seattle. We're going there today to see if she's doing okay. Any of you have experience in genetics? Professional or personal genetic issues at all? Okay. Nancy, good. Glad you're back too, Nancy. Okay, we're going to do a little bit of the brief review of the bioethics terms, principles, and the decision-making model that we're using this week, and then we're going to dig into a really unknown, emerging, difficult topic of human cloning. Tom Witt accused me last night of saying all week, on Saturday, we're going to be doing human cloning. I said, that is how I said it. That's right. We're going to be doing a case study about human cloning. There's no cloning here, so if you were interested in being cloned, you might as well leave. Okay, some of the most common terms used in bioethics, I'm not going to go over every one of them, although in your small groups, as you talk about things, you might want to refer back to this. Ethics itself is the formulation of moral principles, rules, and standards that we try to live by, that are to guide our lives, which is a specific sort of area of study within the broader general notion of morality, which is anything having to do with right and wrong. An ethical issue and an ethical dilemma we have tried to distinguish between in these classes, because ethical issues arise all the time, anytime humans interact. I used the example earlier this week of a gentleman who asked a question. If I had ignored him or said what a stupid thing to say or ask, that would be a matter of ethics. My responding to him or not responding well to him is an ethical issue. Our focus this week, however, is on the struggle in an ethical dilemma, which is a situation where two or more principles or values conflict. And a dilemma can be present within one person. I can be experiencing a dilemma in a certain situation just within myself, or it can be between two people or more, among many people. But we're focusing on dilemmas because that's where the difficult issues arise, when we have a conflict among strongly held principles or values. Today's case will certainly get into these two notions of intrinsic and instrumental value, as have a couple of the other cases we've looked at this week. Intrinsic value is value for one's own sake, where instrumental is one's value for the sake of others. And as you will see in the scenarios we use today, whether to clone a human being and for what purpose, we'll get into the question of whether people are valued in and of themselves for their own sake, or valued for the sake of others, and that will become clear in the cases here. We also might want to consider today responsibility, which we haven't focused on a lot, but it's an area for which an individual or institution, or I might say here today, the church or society, is accountable. it's broader than a duty, which is part of one's responsibility, specific kinds of duties, which we often talk about with medical professionals having certain duties. But what is the responsibility of people of faith, of the government, of the medical community, of perhaps ethicists themselves, when we get to this emerging area of human cloning? So I suspect that will come up in today's discussion. People have been really good this week about pulling out the key principles that are coming up in the cases that we've been doing. I'm going to highlight the big four. Some of you have heard this a number of times. Those are non-maleficence, which is the standard do not harm, which comes out of the Hippocratic Oath and has been the bulk of our Western tradition for ethics for hundreds and hundreds of years. Beneficence, which is certainly related to non-maleficence, is not only do we not harm, but we have a responsibility to promote whole well-being of persons. And we talk in our series this week a lot about whole well-being, including more than just physical well-being, but spiritual, emotional, psychological well-being as well. Autonomy, most of us are familiar with this concept. I, as an American citizen, have the right to choose. I can self-determine. I'm responsible for me, and I have rights in that way. That comes out of the principle of autonomy. It also leads to a number of things which may come up today. This will be interesting to see. The legal concept of informed consent, that we can make decisions about our own medical care, but we must know what we're talking about, know the risks and benefits of procedures, and so forth. In order to be autonomous individuals, we must be able to make decisions, have decision-making capacity. And I generally see that has three components. One, that I can understand the information provided to me. Two, that I can make a decision based on that information. And three, that I can communicate that decision. So it's important to talk about decisional capacity for every kind of decision that might need to be made. That flows from autonomy. And last, for our discussion this week, is surrogacy. If I can't make my own decision, if I don't have capacity, who can make it for me? And we can talk more about that maybe. And then justice, which is gaining increased recognition, I would say, in the ethics community, particularly as resources seem to dwindle in certain arenas, notably healthcare and others. The concept here for the principle of justice is generally the notion of fairness or equity. And that might be fairness in treatment among people, or it might be fairness in distribution of resources. Depends on the situation. Then others flow out of these primary principles: confidentiality, honesty, fidelity, utility, and burden benefit. Some of those may well come up in our discussions, and we can highlight those. You want to add anything, Dan? For that so far?
You just mentioned a little bit about utility, because that's where this society stuff comes in a lot, too, with justice.
This will be big. It has been big in our discussions of organ donation in a couple of cases this week. Utility refers to the greatest good for the greatest number, a way to maximize the well-being of the larger community. And it sometimes gets confused with this concept, and we found this week, of beneficence. Beneficence talks about promoting whole well-being for the individual in question. Utility is about promoting the greatest good for the greatest number who might be involved with or affected by a decision made in a certain case.
So one example might be if there's a new procedure that costs $3 million, it might well be for the well-being of an individual. But instituting that as policy might not be for the overall well-being of society, because we could use that resources in other ways. So there can be a conflict in terms of well-being, whether it's an individual or social well-being.
And what we said at the first part of the week is that ethics is always operating on two levels. One is the individual or case level. The other is at the societal or macro or policy level. So always those two issues come into play, and we need to be struggling with them at the same time. Okay, should we leave this back as it is here, Amo? Can you see this okay? Sometimes it helps when we put the shades down. This week we've been using, and both Dan and I use in our teaching, this particular model of ethical decision making. I've said most days that there are several models out there that one could use. Some have more steps. I'm not sure I've seen any with fewer steps. This is adapted from Ron Hamel, who's an ethicist in the Chicago area. That when we have a situation, ideally we have time to sit and talk about it. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes it needs to be decided immediately. My belief is that if we've spent time at Holden Village or in a classroom or among friends talking through the steps, that those steps will come faster and better when we really are in a crunch situation. And that way we will make the best decision in a situation that we can. First three steps are about analyzing the situation. First, to gain as much relevant information as possible. That includes definitions, maybe some statistics, who's involved, what the worldviews are of those people involved, whatever information one might need. That became clear with a number of our cases this week. We need to know what neurofibromatosis is, what the accuracy is of the test, and those kinds of things. Then, often we stop at step two because we find out what we're talking about really isn't a dilemma. It's an issue of communication, it's an issue of caregiving, or something else that comes up and we say, you know, this really isn't a dilemma, it's just that we need to discuss more clearly what's happening. And now that we know, the issue has gone away or has been resolved. If we find that truly some of these principles conflict, then it is a dilemma, and then we move forward. And I say to my students, generate as many alternatives as possible. Notably, most likely alternatives. Don't get too crazy about things that really aren't likely to happen. But think creatively about the possibilities for action here. And in addition to that, look at the consequences. Good and bad, long-term, short-term, and who's going to be affected in what way. The model that we use mixes, we call it a mixed contextual approach. It mixes concern with consequences, often looked at as utilitarianism, and concern for person or respect for persons, which is a more deontological understanding. Then we get into moral assessment, that is taking each of those possible likely alternatives and consequences and analyzing them in regard to the relevant principles that are active in that particular case. Secondly, we need to assess underlying motive. The same action may be ethical or unethical depending on somebody's motive. Go ahead and don't treat grandma's pneumonia so she dies because I want to get her $1 million life insurance policy might be unethical, but letting grandma die because she didn't want to be treated in pneumonia in this particular situation is respecting grandma's wishes and doing perhaps surrogate decision making for her autonomy. Last, choose an alternative and justify it. That's where our students get all nervous. You mean I have to decide something? And I have to say why, and I have to say why I think what you would do isn't what I would do based on some of this moral reasoning. Difficult to do, because this is a dilemma. And people often leave a decision still feeling a little uncertain. I always do this because I think it's a gut thing. Deep down, we're not sure always what could happen. If we were more sure, we wouldn't have to be doing all this. Last but not least, we revisit the decision later, when we're a little clearer, when the emotion has passed, perhaps, and think through, could we have done something else? Why? What else might we have done? That's a quick going through that model. Question about that? Okay, Dan's going to do a little bit about human cloning, recognizing that he doesn't do human cloning.
Yet.
Yet, nor do I. Nor probably do any of you, unless you didn't dare raise your hand when I asked about that. Well, just a little background that will help us with our scenarios and then get into our cases.
Well, let's just start with the question. What is, when we talk about cloning, what are we talking about? What is it?
Asexual reproduction.
Asexual reproduction, right? But there are other forms of asexual reproduction. So what does cloning refer to specifically?
Maybe Xerox copy some.
The Xerox copy. Now what we're talking about here is replication, a replication of genetic code of one individual into another individual. Right? Now, as Mary asked the question about, are anybody here identical twins or have identical twins in family?
We do.
And identical twins is one of nature's ways of making genetic replication. Two individuals who have the same genetic code, same genetic material. So what we're talking about in that sense is not without precedence here, but we're talking about doing it, as Joel pointed out, asexually, and through human technology, as opposed to what would be seen as more natural forms of reproduction here. Now, I've tried to do a very quick and grossly oversimplified sketch on the board, but just to give us a sense about things, and if any of you have a better understanding of this, want to clarify it, I think that that's fine. But in most human reproduction, what you have is the zygote, the female egg, being fertilized by the male sperm. And the key thing here is that each of them contribute genetic material from that, so that the resulting organism or baby has combined genes, combined genetic material from both parents or both sources there. What I, as I understand here now, this is what is based on what's been happening with the Dolly phenomenon, the cloning of animals, in this case sheep here. The technology that's being used now is that you start with an egg, a zygote, an egg from there, and then a cell, a different cell. It used to be that you were using only embryonic stem cells, but now they're able to use differentiated cells, cells that have already gone through the process of differentiating but still have the same genetic material. And what happens here is you extract the nucleus that contains the genetic material from the egg, and you extract the nucleus from cell B, which has the genetic material, and you take this nucleus and put it in this egg. And then you literally zap it. You use an electrical charge, zap it, that seems to be able to trigger then the process of replication. And so you follow the same process of replication. You have a new cell, but the genes only come from cell B, from the nucleus of cell B. And so as the cell begins to replicate, divide into 4 and then into 16, and begins to both replicate and differentiate, what happens now is it's only doing the genetic material from cell B. And so you are creating a genetically identical, or virtually identical. There may be some differences when you have mutations. There's some controversy about whether there be some genetic contribution from the outlying material here. But basically, by and large, the genetic material is only from cell B. And that's what leads to then the cloning of the genetically identical material. So that's the technology. Some important things to know just in terms of background on it here. First of all, in what we've been able to get so far with Dolly and a couple other animals, keep in mind that a dolphin takes many, many attempts in order to get one successful clone. And so you, in the case of Dolly, it was somewhere between 200 and 300 attempts that resulted in about 16 initially viable embryos. And then out of those, only one actually reached term in terms of a successful sheep. And so it raises the question, if you start to talk about human cloning, you have a very high potential of having unviable or damaged fetuses and embryos coming out of this. And what is that? What kind of ethical issues does that raise? Now, a couple of things to keep in mind is that currently there is the National Bioethics Advisory Council, NBAC, was convened by President Clinton a year or so ago, to consider this, and there's currently a 5-year moratorium in place for federal funding that would go towards human cloning. Now, keep in mind what this does. It does not prohibit research into human cloning. It prohibits federal dollars being used to that. But the flip side of that is it also removes federal oversight. And so this can take place in the private sector without federal funding, but also without federal oversight. And so that's our current situation on it. A couple other things to keep in mind is that many of the arguments that are raised today of concern over human cloning are the very same arguments that were raised 20 to 25 years ago about in vitro fertilization. In fact, you may remember the whole debate about test tube babies and what would happen about test tube babies and was this ethical. I bring that up simply because, by and large, in vitro fertilization is a fairly commonly accepted practice today. In fact, I have members of my immediate and extended family who have children who were conceived by in vitro fertilization. But 20 to 25 years ago, and often, I'll back up as well, oftentimes the language we use itself is charged. There's a difference between saying you have a child who is conceived in vitro fertilization versus you have a test tube baby in your family. And so keep in mind, the very language we use oftentimes carries value with it in emotionally charged images. Nevertheless, there are some distinct differences about using human cloning for reproduction. A couple other things. The debate about human cloning now is taking place in two different areas. One is trying to get a technology going that you would be able to clone specific organs, specific bone marrow, specific genes, or cells, or blood cells, and so forth, that without having to clone an entire human being to get them. And most people agree that there's a fairly good consensus that that is, at least at this point, seen as an ethical alternative. That you create what's in need, and there would be many, many things that could be used for cloning skin tissue for burn patients, cloning organs and so forth from that. Where the controversy comes into play is whether or not to clone entire human beings. And what we would like to do today is to have you consider that issue, both broadly speaking, but also with some specific cases. Because one of the things we'll find out is that even if we decide that something in general may be ethical, it may not necessarily be ethical in a specific case. So as Mary said, there's fairly broad consensus now that withholding or withdrawing treatment can be an ethical option at the end of life for someone, but it may not be ethical in all cases. And that's where motive or other things can help us determine. Or somebody may decide, for example, that physician-assisted suicide may be an ethical option in some cases, but there may be other cases where it's not ethical. So deciding the broad question doesn't necessarily decide the more narrow question. Mary, do you want to add anything to that?
One other thing. It's important to remember that genetics does not equal identity. Identical twins have the same genetic material. They are not the same person. They do not have the same identity. The influence of the environment is strong, and studies have shown that. So when we're talking about replicating genetic material, are we talking about replicating personhood or identity? That's an important piece to remember as we look at our cases. Do you want to just put that up?
Yes, I want to put one other thing up because I'm going to call your card before you use it. All right. Many people say, "Oh, I'm opposed to cloning. That's playing God." All right. That's playing God with human life. Well, Mary has this wonderful little illustration here.
Some of you have seen it this week already.
Where's the turn-on switch?
It's just right there. Right there.
All right. Just to keep in mind that this shows a patient up here who's hooked up to artificial blood, artificial stomach, artificial heart, artificial lungs, artificial labor, artificial appendix, and he's holding him aside and says, "Please let me die." And the physician or the healthcare provider over here says, "What? And play God?" The only reason I bring this up is that this argument has been invoked at virtually any time new technology is being invoked. Giving someone aspirin for a headache is interfering with nature, all right? Or people have brought this up with vaccines, or organ donation. That is, we're already well into the situation where we constantly intervene in what would be a natural process. And we use human ingenuity and human creativity to do it. So simply saying it's unethical to play God won't hold water.
You're going to use it. You've got to defend it.
Yeah, use it. You tell why. What specifically is different in this case that makes it unethical as opposed to other cases where we see it as an ethical option? Okay. Now, having said that, we have, I think we got enough for five cases here, Mary. We've got, we want to give you practice on some different scenarios. And so we're going to divide you up into five groups, four or five people in each one, have you look at we'll read these issues over. The questions you'll be asked are identical in each group, but your scenario is a little bit different. And so we want you to focus both on the broader question. Think about, is this in fact an ethical dilemma? If so, why? What's in conflict here? But then get to the issue about both, is human cloning ever an ethical option? And if so, is it an ethical option in your case?
You don't want to use all six, huh?
Do you have enough for all six?
Can we have six groups? There's six goods. I can't choose between these cases.
Yeah, we need to get about six groups of four people. So start off with four people in each group. I don't think, Rachel, if you want to come down, you're welcome to join us. Otherwise, I don't think we'll send you to the balcony.
23, 24 people.
Okay,
perfect.
So let's start with four here. Okay. Maybe three of you join.
We thought about numbering you off so you don't just sit with people you've talked with all week.
Not all.
Sort of kidding. But do try to have a mix. If you're all new in the group, try to get somebody who's been around for a little while and a new one go with some other folks.
And while you're getting started on that, Mary and I are going to be reading these cases into the tape. So we'll be up here in front. Let's put them in order.
Yeah. That's just one of the reasons we're using it.
Back is great.
I'm leaving out.
Okay, Dan and I are going to switch off here, reading every other case. First scenario A. Margaret and Jan are a lesbian couple who have been together 5 years. 2 years ago, they symbolized their commitment by having a holy union ceremony among their friends and family members. In their early 30s, they have decided that now is the time to start a family. Margaret and Jan have considered several options, including adoption and in vitro fertilization, using donor sperm. But after much reflection, they have decided that taking advantage of recently developed cloning technology is the route with which they are most comfortable. They have seen how difficult it can be for openly lesbian couples to adopt a child, having watched several of their lesbian friends be denied a child through adoption. They considered in vitro fertilization, but they don't know any male friends whom they would want as a donor, and they don't want to have to worry about shared parental rights after the child is born. They are not comfortable with an anonymous sperm donor, as they don't know what kind of genetic material would be donated. In addition, cloning allows both Margaret and Jan to contribute to the conception of their child. They have decided that they will use Margaret's DNA and implant it in an egg taken from Jan, thereby ensuring that all the basic reproductive material for their child is, quote, theirs. Assuming that cloning technology is now available, two questions. One, can cloning a human for reproduction ever be ethical? Two, should Margaret and Jan be able to use cloning to have a child?
This is scenario B. Let me check the tapes there. Robert and Jennifer are a couple who have long sought to have children, but recently have discovered that Robert is infertile. They have considered adoption, but deeply long for a child who is, quote, their own, unquote. Their doctor suggested that they consider in vitro fertilization using an anonymous sperm donor and an egg from Jennifer, but they are opposed to this on religious grounds. They believe that artificial insemination using another man's sperm is equivalent to adultery and therefore a violation of their commitment to fidelity to each other and to God. After much prayer and reflection, Robert and Jennifer have decided to try to have a child through cloning. They plan to take DNA from Robert and implant it into an egg from Jan. They believe that this will allow them to have the family they always wanted without violating their marriage vows. Questions. Assuming that cloning technology is now available, A, can cloning a human for reproduction ever be ethical? B, should Robert and Jennifer be able to use cloning to have a child? What reasons would you give to support your answers?
This is scenario C. Jill and Steve have been married 7 years. They have wanted to start a family for some time, but have waited until a genetic test became available to determine whether or not Jill was a carrier of a genetic disorder that runs in her family. While both women and men can carry the disorder, it only affects males. In fact, Jill watched both of her brothers develop the disease in their teenage years and later die prolonged deaths by their early 20s. The genetic test reveals that Jill is, in fact, a carrier of the disorder, and thus she has a 50% chance of passing it along to any children who carry her genes. She and Steve have considered adopting children, but Jill has always longed to carry a child herself. In vitro fertilization using one of Jill's eggs is not an option, as that would pass along her genetic material, and she does not want to be a surrogate for someone else's embryo, even if it were fertilized by Steve. They have decided that cloning is their best option, as it relies only on Steve for genetic material, but she can still provide the eggs so that the embryo would be uniquely theirs. Assuming the technology is available, two questions. Can cloning a human for reproduction ever be ethical? And should Jill and Steve be able to use cloning to have a child? What reasons would you give to support your answers?
This is scenario D. Jack is a very successful, highly intelligent researcher and entrepreneur. He has developed a number of scientific procedures that promise to contribute greatly to human welfare. And through his skills and hard work, he has amassed a large fortune. Jack values intelligence very highly and would like to see any child of his have similar intellectual gifts. He loves his wife Susan very much but she is only of average intelligence, and there is some history of mental illness in her family. They both agree that it would be better to have a child by reproducing Jack's DNA through cloning, rather than risking conceiving a child through combining their DNA. Susan says she is happy to carry the child and to use her egg with Jack's DNA so that the child will be uniquely theirs. They are aware that other factors besides DNA, such as environment, shape a person, so they don't intend to produce another Jack, but they feel that cloning will give their child the best advantages they can as his parents. Assuming that cloning technology is now available, A, can cloning a human for reproduction ever be ethical? B, should Jack be able to clone himself to have a child? What reasons would you give to support your answers?
Scenario E. David and Diane have been married 7 years and have one daughter, Mary, aged 5. A terrible car accident has left Mary brain dead, still breathing, and with her other organs functioning, but with no possibility of reversing the brain death. Having worked through their initial grief and shock at the reality of losing their only child, David and Diane have asked that some of Mary's genetic material be preserved so that she can be cloned. Diane would like to use one of her eggs with Mary's DNA to give birth to another child. Assuming that this cloning technology is available, question one, can cloning a human for reproduction ever be ethical? And two, should David and Diane be able to use cloning to have a child? What reasons would you give to support your answers?
The final scenario, scenario G. Amanda and Peter are a happily married couple with 2 children, Sam, age 6, and Julie, age 5. Recently, Julie had a severe illness from which she has recovered, but the medication she took so severely damaged her kidneys that she now must be on dialysis on an ongoing basis. Her parents have explored the possibility of getting a new kidney for her through organ donation, but have found out that Julie has a rare blood type that will make finding a match virtually impossible. Without a transplant, Julie's long-term prognosis is very poor. After much prayerful reflection with their pastor, Amanda and Peter decide to use recently developed cloning technology to have another daughter by cloning Julie. They know that a person can function fine with just one kidney, so they hope that when their new daughter reaches an appropriate age, she will be able to donate one of her kidneys to Julie. They had been talking about having a 3rd child anyway, and are convinced that they will love her no less than they love Sam and Julie. Assuming that cloning technology is now available, number one, can cloning a human for reproduction ever be ethical? Number two, should Amanda and Peter be able to use cloning to have another child? What reasons would you give to support your answers? This is the end of the scenarios. They'll be in small group discussion for about 5 more minutes, and then we'll do large group debriefing.
Questions and considerations here. Let me preface our bigger discussion by saying one of the reasons we pushed ourselves to present these cases when they're not familiar to us. I haven't had experience at the bedside with human cloning. I've had experience at the bedside with all our other issues. Is to say that if we have any chance to have ethics keep pace with technology, this is one of those chances, though I tend to think we're already behind the eight ball. We in the ethical, theological realm. But because Clinton has put this moratorium on federal funding for 5 years, while people consider this, well-reasoned people, thoughtful people, I want the rest of us to get on board thinking about it too, so that we're not caught unawares when it happens. We may yet be caught unawares, but it's one place where we can be a little further ahead than perhaps we've been on some of the other issues.
Let me ask one other question too, because some of you say, can't we just go with our gut reaction on this one? How many of you find the idea of identical twins personally revolting and a threat to human society. There's one back there. So the reason I point that out is because in many cultures historically, identical twins were seen as personally revolting and a threat to society, were routinely killed at birth.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. There are many cultures where twins were seen as unnatural and therefore to be eliminated for the well-being of society. So the danger with going our gut is oftentimes socially and culturally formed. And so that's why we had to go sort of put aside, you don't want to eliminate your values, your emotions, stuff, but also not be simply run by them. Just think, are there good reasons we can give? Mary? Well, let's start off as we have all week to see, what do you see as relevant principles? What's relevant in this issue here to be thinking about in terms of guiding us? Any of these or other ones that aren't up there?
Are you going to let us know the other...
I'm just going to say, as you answer, say, well, our case was, this kind of situation, and this is what was relevant here. That would help others.
Let me tell you what we're going to do. So we're going to spend a few minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, knowing which side and are there relevant principles. Then we're just going to poll you on the general question, can human cloning for reproduction ever be ethical? Get a sense of the group there. Ask you for some of your reasons on the broader question, yes or no, and then we'll go into the individual scenario so you have a sense of that.
I think I thought of autonomy in the sense of decision-making capacity.
Okay, whose?
The people making the decision.
Well, we're talking about the parents here,
the
potential parents?
Okay. Right, in the sense that are they worked through enough issues to be making a well-informed...
Well-informed, good. Are they well-informed in that area here? And the other question is, autonomy will be ethical. We don't have autonomy to murder someone just because we disagree with them. All right, so the action has to be ethical, and that becomes very important because you can't, a physician or healthcare provider doesn't need to respond to a patient's autonomy if they believe it's an unethical choice. So that autonomy is certainly relevant, but it's not going to answer the question about whether or not it's ethical. Yeah.
I think utility, greatest good, questions arise because of the expense of this, and also the possibility of many attempts that do not succeed, and a human being damaged would raise a
non-maleficence, The chances is certainly at the initial stages, this is not going to be a perfected technique. So are we willing to have many, many, potentially many, many damaged fetuses and potentially damaged children? In order to so-called perfect this technology is a question.
I put this in quotes because you can imagine that will raise some real issues.
Will these other practice fetuses not live?
What? This is a question.
Some may not live, some may live.
What happened in the case of Dolly was, I think it was about 270, 280, somewhere in there, were attempted. Out of that, it was less than 50 that actually worked to get to the point where you had a fertilized egg. And then as the replication went on, it eventually got down to about 16 that actually got to the fetus stage, but only one of them reached viability. Now, in a natural process, many of those would have resulted in miscarriages, that kind of thing. But the point is, what happens if you discover in the second trimester there's several problems, or the third trimester? And this raises the question because there are many, many people in our society that believe that once you've had conception, you have a human being. Other people say further along.
I also heard a report in the popular media that even after Dolly was born, she's exhibited rapid aging.
There's just unknown consequences at this point. And the only way we'll find out the consequences is by trying it out. Is that an acceptable risk? Do the benefits, potential benefits outweigh the burdens on that? Other principles people saw as relevant here.
I saw an issue with justice.
Yeah, how so?
If a wealthy couple chooses to use cloning to reproduce, you still get a division in classes. Mm-hmm. You get this genetically pure upper class and this genetically sort of natural lower class.
Almost inevitably, there's going to be some, who has access is going to be a big question. How does that tend to get decided in our society? My money is the market. We allow the market to regulate this. If you have the resources, then we respect the individual's autonomy. What issues does that raise in terms of money being the deciding factor in this kind of issue?
We've brought out the point that it would increase the disparity between the rich and the...
Yeah. Justice there. And other people have said the other risk is that it really further commodifies children. Children now are being dealt with in the marketplace, and they're essentially a commodity. If you have enough money, you can pay for it. If you don't, so that's an issue that's being raised. Now, let me point out a flip side of this issue of justice. One of the cases here has a case about whether or not a lesbian couple should be allowed to use cloning. Virtually all of the reproductive technologies that have been developed, so far, in vitro fertilization, fertility drugs, variety of things, are only eligible have been used primarily for heterosexual couples. So cloning is one way that a homosexual couple would have access to technology to allow them to have, quote, their own children. So some have argued if society is going to invest in all these other techniques, which it already is doing, out of fairness and justice, we should also have cloning available because it makes it available to other couples who can't take advantage of the other ones. Just throw that out there.
Yeah. We talked about, I guess what we would categorize as utility, and that's the issue of controlling this. If you had a Hitler who tried to create a perfect race by cloning, you know, what are the ethics involved in that? Mm-hmm. Where it moves beyond an individual choice, but a societal choice to produce perfection.
And we've got at least a couple different options. Should the government or federal government be the one who mandates and does it, or should the market decide? Yeah. You know, and how once you have the technology, how really can you control it? Hand over here.
There's been a couple issues about utilities and why that would be a negative thing. And I understand those, creating this disparity in classes and this control issue. But is there a possibility that that could be a good thing, that we're creating these more genetically pure people that are more free from diseases? And, you know, could that be possibly seen as a good thing?
Some people have argued that. And then another possibility for the positive side of utility is maybe people say, look, we are expanding the area of human autonomy. We're expanding people's right to make decisions that affect them deeply and personally. We're expanding human freedoms. Now, that doesn't mean there shouldn't be some controls on it, but some have argued that's good for society in general. Just as it's good that we introduce birth control because that has expanded people's freedom in the area of sexuality, this is another way of expanding the area of human freedom. There'll be risks, but the risks are outweighed by the good.
Carol? Is it true that all cloned animals are the same sex, are female?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's not a good question. I don't know either one.
I just thought of this, but it seems to me that here it is again. This is a gender bias issue, and we're going to have far more females, and females will be used to provide a service that males aren't required to do.
Well, and the concern works the other way as well. In societies that give high preference to male children, will this be a technology that now allows simply to reproduce male children if they're the favored one? Whichever is favored in society, you get it, because that further exacerbates it. Yeah. And what you see is that, you know, each individual decision can be justified, but the cumulative weight is oftentimes hard to predict. We need to move into the other areas. Is there anything else that
anybody say non-maleficence?
Yes.
Yeah.
It did come up.
Why?
Well, in the case that we had to clone out the potential for a disease being transmitted from one generation to the next seemed to be both non-maleficence and beneficence. We're promoting the general well-being of the next generation. So both of those were relevant factors in our case.
Okay, and carefully thinking, utility might be the cloning out the genetic disorder so that it's better for more people coming down the line. Remember, non-maleficence is about the person in and of himself.
It's good for the person that's going to...
Who won't get the disorder. Okay,
right.
Good.
Right.
Yeah, it could be.
But non-maleficence came up with also the concern about many damaged or unviable. You have it up there.
Right. Yeah, good. Okay, that's exactly
what
I'm trying
to get.
Well, then
I need to go to the next step.
Okay, yeah.
Well, and non-maleficence also can be looked at and said you could create, I'm using the example of a Frankenstein, you create an individual who becomes aware of their identity.
Well, and this is part of the question is, does this create a psychological burden? Now, let me just simply point out, that was a big issue 25 years ago with test tube babies. This is an unbearable burden for anybody to grow up knowing that they were conceived this way. I gotta tell you, with my little cousins and niece and nephew, it's just not an issue. It's not an unbearable burden at all. So 20 years later, we're saying, well, that was a plausible argument then, but it hasn't borne out.
On the other hand, the case over here is the baby who's cloned to provide an organ for an ailing mother who needs a kidney. Might that be a psychological burden?
All right, but you're tipping our hand here. Oh. Beyond the general question, we need to move on. Is there something else?
Just one last thing, utility and biodiversity. Are we shrinking the gene pool or increasing it? Are we not being honest about we will mutate in the future, so.
And that's a really good point. This is one of the ones that I really point, push my students on in terms of thinking about likely consequences. Yeah. How likely that most of it is that the most of the human race is going to end up resulting to a clone? I think it's fairly unlikely.
Right.
Now, you can see kind of Star Wars scenarios or those kind of things further down the road, but really, the vast majority of humankind is not going to be affected directly by this, unless something deleterious or harmful gets introduced via this that has a broader effect. But it's still a relevant one to think about because it has some ramifications.
Most infertile people in developing world countries are not going to be going
to... This is a non-issue.
But I have a question about the mechanics of it. Isn't it true that someone who is very intelligent and wants their genes to continue and have very bright kids, don't they also have genetically the possibility of less intelligence and that they
could... There's no one-to-one correlation. There's no guarantee.
And that, and in our case, the average kind of wife might be the one that had the genetic material that would lead to a genius-level kid. Isn't that possible?
Oh, sure.
Or don't I understand
it
right?
We don't know what intelligence is.
Right.
So that's a relevant factor in certain specific scenarios. Mary, let's go to the overall question here. Can human cloning for regression ever be ethical? If you consider all the different possibilities, can you conceive of times when it could be ethical, or should it simply be seen as an unethical alternative to be avoided?
How many say yes? It could sometimes.
Take the question again.
Can human cloning for reproduction, for human regression, ever be an ethical option?
Conceivably. 15 or so?
How many say no? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, so we got about a 3-to-1 ratio here. Relevant reasons. Let's start with the minority. Why not? Those who say no, why not?
First, you have to perfect the science. Mm-hmm. And is it worth the risks to get to the point that you can perfect the science?
No. Too many potential negative consequences that outweigh the potential gain, right? That sort of argument? Yeah. Now, I mean, we're dealing with human material here. We're not talking about creating organic molecules or something.
Really, a utilitarian argument, right?
In this case, yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other arguments by those who would oppose it? Yeah?
Well, I would, the whole program, I see it as another program for the wealthy of the world.
So justice issue.
It
further exacerbates already.
Yes. And even in ways we don't even know at this time.
Yeah. Other reasons, Joel?
Inability to control its misuse.
Okay. Again, another potential risks outweigh potential gains.
Inability to what?
To control its misuse. Okay.
People could start using it for purposes other than creating.
Yeah. We see the same kind of arguments if you think about atomic energy. There's good potential positive things for atomic energy, but there's tremendous potential for abuse as well. How once it's there, how do you control and prevent that?
What principle might we put those under? The potential for misuse,
respect for persons,
ethics, morality.
The principles here, rather than general guidelines.
Is it non-maleficence to individual persons? Is it utilitarian justice? What is?
We've had both justice and utility up here on that side, right?
Yeah.
It might be burden benefit that the burden of it is more weighted than the benefits gained.
But you're talking societal level, right?
And this is what gets confusing. When we talk about burden benefit at the social level, we're talking about utility.
Utility is
how do you maximize good and minimize harm?
But respect for persons
is a context in which, you know, persons should not be commodities.
Yeah.
Does that fall under respect?
This whole thing for respect for persons. No, don't treat people as means to an end. Treat them as an end themselves.
Yeah,
so people say
over here,
this cheapens intrinsic value. Or you're treating somebody for instrumental value. No?
I say respect of nature, because genetics, what do we share? Somewhere like 95% with the chimpanzee, so there's only a small percentage that makes us. And mutation happens all the time, and you don't know what will happen. It's a toss to see what happens. You don't know.
But how do you draw, we use all sorts of interventions in nature when we don't know. How do you draw the line?
Well, I'm saying a reason not to, I'm saying just a no.
Some have argued, it's interesting, some have argued that this may be the answer to endangered species. that we can, where we have limited numbers, we can, this may be a way to actually help us bring back populations that are threatened.
Cheetahs have a limited
population. I was thinking about that with the Margaret Atwood novel, where all the women are sterile, and they're trying to have, I mean, who knows that atomic stuff could cause that.
Let's go quickly now to see some of the reasons. We got some stuff here.
I didn't know how to put yours, by the way. It's not natural, it's sort of...
Yeah, it goes against nature.
Nature, okay.
Well, I think it's just respect nature.
Respect for nature.
That we can't, I don't believe we can.
Well,
which goes along, the science is not perfected.
Yeah.
Part of people talk about it is appropriate human humility, that we accept our place within the ecological order, our place within nature, as respect for nature. How about those of you who say there can be, there's conceivably are places where it could be an ethical option? What are some reasons?
Beneficence,
right? How do you see beneficence involved?
You're sort of guaranteeing that the child that you are producing will be well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one scenario has a place where the parents are potential carriers of genetic disorders. And this would be one way for them to have, quote, their own children, but to protect against their child carrying on that genetic disorder. So you could argue that's a beneficent motive.
It's adopting.
Right? So it's adoption. Adopting. And that's the whole question. Well, no, what are you talking about? What are the alternatives? In a world where we have lots of unwanted children, should we be investing in this technology or should we instead be? But realistically, there are many people who want children who are not going to adopt. Do we make this technology available or do you simply say it's tough luck? You either adopt or you don't have kids.
But then it goes on the black market, I mean, and then without regulation.
That's the other thing.
Right.
Many people say, look, it's inevitable it's going to happen, so let's think through how to best guide and shape it so we
the
keep
technology
it.
Technology is there. You've got it.
Same argument happens with physician-assisted suicide. It's not a question of whether or not it's going to occur. It occurs. Should it be brought into the open so we can discuss it and have guidelines for it? Should it be kept, you know, behind... I'm sorry.
We have 2 minutes.
We have 2 minutes.
That's awesome.
Other arguments
here. Shuts off.
Why could it conceivably be ethical?
Utility.
Autonomy. Right?
Autonomy
as well. How autonomy and utility? How would they be?
Autonomy, sterility. In our case, sterility in the male, one for another child. It's a way to reproduce another child of your own genetic makeup.
Yeah. And the whole notion of it does expand human freedom, does expand human options. Now the question of whether it's an appropriate expansion still has to be addressed, but many would argue that. In the interest of time, I think we could go through several others here. You folks have done a tremendous job in a limited amount of time and really seeing the complexity of this issue. What I'd like to do is to go quickly group to group and have you just briefly, 10 to 15 seconds, give us a synopsis of what your case was and what you decided as a group if you reach consensus here. So Joel, your group over here, what was the central part of your case?
Our case dealt with a lesbian couple that had been together for 5 years and they had had a sort of a marriage ceremony. Now they've decided they want to have a child. For various reasons, all the other options are not available to them. They can't adopt, they can't do any of these things because of society or whatever. So should they be allowed to have a child through cloning, and they would use, you know, the egg from one person and the other cell from the other. So it would be a way of combining their two beings.
Maturity.
Our group decided that the lesbian issue for us wasn't really a big issue. The fact that they were lesbians didn't change a whole lot to us as far as any other couple. So we were mainly focusing on you know, could any couple be allowed to do this? Because we all felt, I don't know if we all felt, but we didn't get hung up on the fact that they were lesbians.
Okay.
We, in general, felt like that a lesbian couple should still be allowed to raise a child and have a child. But yeah, we got more into the issues of...
And did you decide...
Did you come to a conclusion as a group?
I don't know. I think
we skipped the second question first,
yeah.
Which was... If it would ever be ethical, would this be an appropriate circumstance? I think we all thought it would be.
You skirted the big issue and said, yeah, these people should.
Well, this is an interesting
one.
Yeah, we'll come on to here. But just to flag this here, in terms of the whether or not they're being lesbian is relevant, people respond two different ways here. Some people say, well, if their proof of homosexuality is a viable option, they will often say, well, look, this expands it. It's a justice issue for gay and lesbian people to have access. And other people say, who don't approve of homosexuality, say, oh my God, if this allows homosexuals to have children, then definitely no. So you can see how it can cut both ways depending on your views of homosexuality. This group here, what was your issue? Your case?
This was the case of the couple where the mother was a transmitter of a blood disorder that only goes to male children. Her two brothers had it, and both of them died in their early 20s. And so now the question is, will she have children with her husband by cloning to eliminate that particular genetic disorder and eliminate the chance of a male child being susceptible to the disease?
Any consensus of your group?
I think we mostly felt okay.
Okay.
That this was a good
if it were considered ethical, this would be an ethical use of it.
Yeah.
Great. We'll come back. We'll have more informal time to talk about the reasons why. What does somebody point out in this particular scenario? This scenario is based on a case of a family member of mine. And what they did was actually, they waited 10 years until a test became available to test whether or not she was a carrier. And they found out she wasn't a carrier, so then they were able to have their own children. Had she been a carrier, they would have been faced with, what do we do now? Okay. Now, case over here.
The tape
probably ended. That's fine. We'll just finish up here and give people lunch.
Intelligent husband and a not so intelligent wife, whether they should have it, or whether they should.
Clone the husband.
She had some history of mental illness and kind of average intelligence.
She was agreeable.
She was agreeable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What'd you decide?
What a downer.
I think some of us decided they were going to do it.
Is it ethical?
Yours was the group who said, we think it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
So if it's going to happen, you know, do these people get to take advantage? That's what many people do, and it's the easy way around. Okay, we're just assuming cloning is going to go. In this case, what do we think? That avoids the should cloning go question.
But we're beyond that. We're assuming it is an option. Is this an ethical option?
Yeah. I said yes.
I said yes.
I thought no.
Any quick reasons why, yes or no?
We're divided.
You're divided. Okay, we'll come back.
It's really a power, it felt like a power thing, you know, the have not kind of thing, and the power and the ego entered in very strongly. And that the wife actually could be a carrier of genes that would produce intelligence.
This one's, I think, a pretty tricky one because people have children all the time for reasons many of us would consider to be unethical, but we don't forbid it. You see the 75-year-old tycoon who marries a 20-year-old wife because he wants more kids or he wants a male kid or something like that. Do we forbid that? No, we don't like it. Many of us would consider it to be unethical. But
or so we're not alone in our old age, someone to take care of us.
How about the group in the back here? I realize we're pushing along quickly because we're over time here. But
way over time.
The Erlander, Nolte,
well, ours was a couple that had already had two children, a boy and a girl. The girl developed a rare disease and it ruined her kidneys. She is faced with a chance of being on dialysis until death. So they decide to clone, try to have a clone, so that they can farm the kidney of this clone girl.
Note the language.
The one that's on dialysis. They can't use the boy because the child that has this disease has a rare blood type, and most of us are intuitive, and we wanted to go with our gut. And well, we think it's not a good idea.
It's a fine place to start, but then you got to move beyond.
Not all ethicists would argue that. Some would say that.
My intuition. The other question is, if she has this rare blood disease, one of her parents has got to have this. So why not try the parent first?
Oh, that was a
cop. Again, this one is modeled after an actual case where many of you may know about it, where a couple did have a second child in order to produce an organ for an older child who needed it.
They did it.
And they did it. And she turned out to be a match. So they're raising this younger child.
But it wasn't cloned. But it wasn't
cloned. It's not cloned. It's not cloned. But see, this would guarantee it. If you're going to have a child, you could guarantee that it would be the match.
It isn't the one that was produced for the match, happy to be doing?
Well, yeah, who knows? Maybe at age 5, she's happy about at age 10.
She was still a baby for a
One more, we better go, folks. Some of us are leaving on the bus and have a few things to do. Sorry.
Okay, ours is a couple. They have a 5-year-old child who is in an accident, is brain dead. And they want to clone their child. Now,
and he's infirm, right?
Well, we decided that if they're both capable of reproduction, that it is not a viable choice. If he is sterile, then in that case, it is another option for them to produce another child. And again, the dilemma, the thing that we came to here was the idea of, do they understand that this child will not be the same child?
Yeah, what's the psychological burden of being Margaret version 2.0?
Right. For both the child and the parents. Are they going to be let down? Is the child always going to grow up in a shadow? Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be a fascinating discussion to get to talk with the parents. You know, my first reaction was, you want to do what? And to hear their story, you know, what are their fears? What are their, I mean, I just was having fun playing out that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last group here in front.
Ours was the male in the relationship was infertile, and they were opposed to in vitro fertilization because that, they considered that the equivalent to adultery. And so they viewed cloning as their only choice.
It's a fascinating one, I think, based on religious grounds. In vitro fertilization would be viewed as having another man's sperm in her body, and opposed on those grounds. And therefore, on religious grounds, feel that cloning is the only option. What did you decide, anything?
It's 2-1.
We agreed to disagree.
Okay.
I have to affirm this group big time. Because I bet if we had taken a poll when you walked in the door and you knew it was about human cloning, most of you would have said no. I think the average citizen feels really nervous about human cloning. Mm-hmm. And we had a high percentage here that said yes. It could be ethical in certain cases, certain
and we tried to pick a mix of cases that were some of them would seem clearly unethical in the cases, some of them seem, wow, it's really hard to say in there. Carol?
It seems to me the difficulty with the kind of case we have is that if the clone is for the purpose of having a child or another individual for its own sake, that's one thing. But if the purpose of the cloning is to farm and sacrifice that, then you can't even use these basic ethical principles
because they're
all supposed to each other.
You use these two values.
Yeah, what's good for one is not good for the other.
But didn't they say they would love her anyway?
Well yeah.
We need to stop for now, actually for the end of the week here. You've all been really wonderful, and it's been a lot of fun to do. The last thing I leave you with is that question about if cloning becomes available, many people think it's just a matter of time. How do we want to regulate it? Do we leave it to the marketplace, which is what basically functions in our society? Or can we think of other alternatives if we don't think that's the best way to do it?
No answer to that one this week, sorry. Some of you figure it out, come back and teach it over.